Sporkies, welcome back to another episode of your favorite horror movie podcast, probably, if I had to guess, maybe, hopefully. I'm joined today by Johnny Boy.
This is me, Johnny D in the house.
Johnny D is in the house. We are back with another A24 film, because you know we can't get enough of them.
We love it.
This time we're talking about Men, which is one that kind of slipped through the cracks in the middle of our push of 2022 films last year. It came out a little bit before Barbarian, and I believe I mentioned it a bit in Barbarian, because they kind of have similar social construct messages in a way, shape, or form. Not exactly the same, but they're similar. But this came in, this is kind of like a mutual decision between John and I. Like you see, we're the analytical brains around here, and if you listen to that shithouse Leprechaun episode, you guys needed some intellect, you know, following that. You needed some highbrow effort out of us.
You need balance, all right?
Yeah. So we picked an A24 film. I've got some analysis. I even found an LA Times article on the movie. So
That's how on top of it he is.
For once. So I'll cite that when it's relevant, which will probably be in this early portion. But I feel like it's been a while. How are you doing, John? How's March?
I'm doing all right, man. March has been pretty tough for the most part. Got hit with the cold because of the instant change in temperature after,
naturally.
Yeah, of course. And then I sprained my ankle last week. So, it's been fucking tough recently, but you know what? We're back in the stew. We're doing it and it's good to be back.
We are back in the stew. Secondary note for me personally, today is the 41st day since filing my taxes with no tax return. I think it's finally hitting my bank account tomorrow. So let's go. No profit from Bloody Spork yet, but it's fine. I'm sure I'll be claiming it on my taxes within the next 5 years, right, guys?
Exactly. Please.
You see the commitment? I already know we're going to be here in 5 years. Yeah, I said it. Men, what do you think? Spoiler free review.
It's definitely an A24 horror movie, that's for sure.
Without a doubt.
I find myself in an awkward position with A24 these days because it's just like I really just have interest in their horror projects. And as of late, I feel like a lot of their horror projects have been feeling kind of samey. So I don't know. I'm kind of not gassing A24 like I used to two to three years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I agree a little bit. I think this movie was a bit artsier than I expected. There's a lot more visual elements than originally thought. It's a very vibrant, beautiful, colorful movie.
Absolutely.
Super well shot. All the technical difficulties, all the technical details of an A24 film are still there through and through. Very, very present. I just think this movie itself was a bit weaker narrative-wise.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I get on my knees for these movies. Considering X and Pearl were so different from each other, but different from a generic A24 film was big. And obviously we did those movies, and those are fantastic. Maxine coming out this year. Super hype. And I agree. It just felt just more like middle of the road, kind of wishy washy, middle, like just very generic. Like this is just like you. If you were to define A24 movie, this would be the definition. I feel like.
Yeah, it's funny that you. I like that you used the word kind of generic because that's kind of how I felt about it. It's what the average person thinks. It's what the average person who hates A24 movies thinks an A24 movie is. So, and you know what? If they said that about this movie, I'd be like, yeah, you're right.
Honestly. Because there's a lot of... There's a lot and not a lot going on here.
Yeah.
Like the premise of the movie and the message it's sending or trying to send is very simple. The director himself, who did Ex Machina in 2014 and Annihilation in 2018.
Can I just say
that
when I saw who directed this, I lost my shit because I knew that name. I knew who Alex Garland was, and I didn't want to Google it because I wanted to challenge myself. So literally for the past week and a half, I've been just racking my brain thinking about what he's made. And I finally gave in right before recording and checked, and I was like, oh, fuck. It's the Ex Machina and Annihilation guy.
Yeah, I've heard those movies are both really good. Amazing. I've never seen them personally, but if they're as good as everybody says they are, then he kind of missed when it came to Men.
And you know what? What's crazy? That guy has a really interesting career.
Really?
He wrote the screenplay for 28 Days Later.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I did read that while researching this movie.
He also wrote the story for the really shitty Devil May Cry game. So it's really funny. Glad to see he's still getting work.
Yeah. And I think... So this is a good time to mention the article. I did read... There was an LA Times article. The director was interviewed. And I don't have the specific screenshot. I read it on... I was... hanging out with Chelsea. You all know Chelsea earlier today.
Yes, sir. Shout out Chelsea.
We talked about this movie a bit, and while we were talking about it, I just like looked up. Well, I was trying to look up all the literary references in the movie because I know there's a bunch.
Yeah.
I don't know all of them, and that's more so in tune with what I was saying about it being like artsy. There's a very obvious like Garden of Eden reference early on in the movie. There's another reference towards the end of the movie that I picked up on, but I can't remember what it was specifically. The Green Man is a thing that's referenced a bunch in, like, medieval churches, I believe, is what I read.
I think it's, like, a Celtic thing, too.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot going on. And even in the LA Times article, within the first paragraph, it says there's literary references to everything from the Bible to Yeats. I don't even know what the fuck Yeats is.
Oh, Yeats is, like, a poet.
Bangers Bro, only.
Yeat, platinum-selling rapper. My goat.
I bet you nobody knows who the fuck Yeet is. maybe. Listening, I should say, specifically. Obviously, people know who Yeet is. Either way. And the article, trying to be funny, there's a little sentence that got a chuckle. And said, the last thing Garland wants to do is mansplain men. Badumts, right?
Right?
Editing Dan, cut in a badumts for me.
That's right? That British humor.
Woo! So, in the article, it's pretty early on, he says that he was basically, or had been working on this movie for about 15 years. And so, and when talking about, okay, this is what he said specifically. He said, I've been working on a version of the script for about 15 years. And so, the reason he mentions that is he's talking about the Me Too movement in reference to the movie, because the article specifically like titles this part of the article "Influences Less Me Too Movement Than the Green Man." So the Green Man, who is the one of the characters, very interesting character throughout the film.
I guess we can say the main antagonist.
Prevalent. Sort of, yeah. I'd say it's hard to say, really.
Yeah.
He's like the initial antagonist and is kind of like this driving symbolic representative force.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say anything is outright the antagonist per se.
I guess the concept of men is.
Yeah. And then the article goes on to talk about different interpretations of the movie as well. And so I'll bring this to your attention before we talk about it too deeply as well. If you haven't seen Men, it's streaming on Showtime, I believe.
Yeah.
That's what I watched it on. Yeah, streaming on Showtime. Go watch it. It's not terrible. It's not too scary. There's some moments that were, like, creepy, but I don't think I was ever, like, out and out scared, per se. Yeah. I can't say... I'll get into it more in depth later, but my issue with the movie is kind of like my interpretation of the message it's delivering. But regardless, the actor, Kinnear, who plays, if you didn't already know, one of the more well-known things about the movie is Roy Kinnear. I think that's
Rory.
Rory Kinnear plays 10 different characters in this movie, I believe. And that's just to further emphasize this idea and message of like all men are the same, basically. Yeah. No matter what, there's a theme of like cyclical toxicity, very visually represented. If you know, you know. And I just think the biggest issue, before I say what Rory said about the movie, the biggest issue is that it has this message it wants to deliver, and it's like self-aware.
Yeah.
About like men being shitty and men doing these things and all this nonsense, et cetera, et cetera. And like you said, he wasn't trying to reference the Me Too movement. He said all of his ideas are predating that movement, so taking that for what it is, regardless, with my interpretation, it's very self-aware, but it's not very self-progressive. Like, it's aware of these problems, but it doesn't do anything about them.
It doesn't really
offer... these things happen.
Yeah.
But...
it doesn't really offer, like, a criticism of, like, men that do that kind of stuff. Or, like, a solution. It's just like, that happens. And I'm like, yeah, I already knew that, man.
It happens. It happens. And men breed toxic masculinity and toxicity. And it's like I said, it's a never-ending loop.
Yeah.
And that's... and they definitely want you to understand that. Like, that is...
I,
without a doubt, the biggest, the most obvious message it sends
is that
toxic masculinity is an endless loop, basically.
I guess my issue with that is I hate that Alex Garland even needed to, like, you know, justify that and say that out loud and say that it was before the Me Too movement, because it's like, listen, guys, it's been okay to criticize men before, way before the Me Too movement.
Yeah, right? So that makes me, like, if you put this movie in 2013, it's crazy commentary.
Yeah.
Like, it's pushing boundaries at that point.
Exactly.
For what it's doing. But waiting until 2022, and like I said, Barbarian coming out shortly after, and like I said on the Barbarian episode, Barbarian does a similar realm of a message,
yeah,
but actually, like, there's consequences to the way men act in that movie, more so than this movie, I feel.
Well, I just think Barbarian, despite how kind of batshit insane it is for the most part, has more of a subtext to it.
Yeah.
It's a lot more, and it's weird because it's subtle, but it's also not in what it's trying to say. But ultimately, I think it delivers that message a lot better and a lot more uniquely than Men does.
And I feel like the story paradigm in Barbarian is a little more fluid and not concrete per se, because like her end goal shifts a bunch based on what's happening.
Yeah.
But in this movie, there's never like the goal is that she's just in trying to enjoy her 2 weeks away from society, I guess. But and men infiltrate that, but then she never men, quote unquote, just Rory Kinnear, never really. Like, by the end of it, the goal is just to survive, and that's not enough of a, like, it's not enough of a pure driving force, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I get that. It's not like a compelling motive, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no, and like I said, there's no consequences. She's our only character. There's only, realistically, two characters.
Yeah.
So there's never really any true tension. Because I never felt unsafe about her position.
Yeah, I figured she was just going to make it all right until the end.
Like, off rip. And she's never really threatened either.
It's, well...
like, she's threatened, but...
but it's like the way of having a weird guy around you is, like, threatening, you know?
Exactly.
Son of a bitch, he might be a genius.
But that's, like... There's no consequence is the issue, which is fair. In society, there's minimal consequence, so maybe he is a genius.
Damn it.
But at the same time, I don't know.
I guess my biggest issue with this movie is that, like, I get it. Literally, I saw the trailer, I saw the title of the movie, I was like, yeah, I get it.
And pre-watching the movie, I figured it had something to do with, like, not an army, but like a group of men.
Yeah.
Harassing
this woman.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's exactly for what the most part, that's what it is.
Right, exactly. But there's just no true...
I just don't think there are many...
I guess the issue is...
Yeah, go ahead.
Right, it's not like the ending happens, but it's not like you don't feel good about it. Nothing was accomplished, really.
Yeah.
Is the issue, I guess.
By the end, once the ending happened, I was just like, all right, that was a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because again, you expect her, I guess spoilers technically, you expect her to survive and she does survive.
Yeah.
Like,
That's it. Are there any lasting consequences for her? Not really.
No. And that's why, so Rory Kinnear, again, to bring back his mention of it, he says, in quote, "You can project out of Harper's story," who's our main lead character, "something about contemporary society and traditional gender roles throughout history. But you can also see it as the story of a woman who suffered a traumatic event and how she processes that trauma and how that trauma keeps on raising its head, albeit in different guises. For me, that's how I found the story most effective.
That's fair. End quote. I see what he's going for in that case, then.
And I think with that interpretation, maybe it's a better movie.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because, sure. But that the problem with that interpretation is that kind of takes away the antagonist, because then it's like presenting it as a non-physical force.
Right.
And it's presenting itself as like trauma embodied.
And it's like, God damn it, do we need another one of those?
Right, and then you're doubling, yeah, it's like a Babadook almost, and you're like doubling down on the fact that there's no consequence.
Exactly.
If you take it that route, you're taking almost less pressure, I guess you could say, on men as a gender.
Right.
Because then you're not focusing on everything they're doing wrong.
Yeah. I guess another issue is that I feel like this movie doesn't shit on men hard enough. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to go for it.
You might as well go all in.
Like, kill me, dude. Tear me a new one.
Like, by the end of it, the way she's, like, physically acting is almost comedy, because you can tell she's just over it.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of wanted her to, like, go on an onslaught and just deal with it one by one and just fucking murk them. Clean house.
I don't know, man. It's just, like, I compare this to, like, the early A24 hitters, like fucking Hereditary. And it's just, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. The difference is just massive.
Yeah. Because
you get something like Hereditary, which is, like, fucking unpredictable like a motherfucker.
Takes family grief as its theme.
And yeah.
Runs with it.
It goes with the whole trauma angle, but it's also fucking horrifying. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, mm-hmm. as we've gone down, you know, the road through time, I feel like A24 has gone, have shifted away from being outwardly scary and being more about that, like, trauma angle. But it's like, bro, you had it. You literally had it.
Yeah. It's an interesting movie. But ultimately, I don't dislike it. I don't think I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting to me. I think if I were more literarily inclined, I would be more intrigued on a rewatch to see if I could get more references, but I barely got them to begin with, so.
If I watched it again. Ain't
shit for me here.
If I watched it again, it'd be because it's like a very pretty movie.
Yeah, no, again, very gorgeous. Like I said, at its technical core, very A24. Very what you expect.
I don't know if Alex Garland has the same cinematographer in every film he does, but like, that motherfucker, he makes some beautiful sets.
Mm-hmm,
my
mm-hmm.
God.
But without further ado, let us get to the bit. Now this is, you're gonna, I don't want to say too much.
Okay.
So I'm gonna just ask you straight up, critically, what do you think Men received on Rotten Tomatoes?
63.
You are close, but it's a bit higher.
65?
More higher.
68.
That's your three strikes, buddy.
Damn it.
Believe it or not, Men has a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes. Giggity. Oh, my.
You can't see me winking at the screen.
What a perfect score for such a silly little movie.
That really takes the piss out of this movie.
It's really the cherry on top for this movie. Critics' consensus, if its narrative and thematic reach sometimes exceeds its grasp, magnetic performances from a stellar cast help Men make the most of its horror provocations. I don't disagree. Yeah. Rory Kinnear, stellar. Takes on however many fucking roles and kills every single one of them.
He definitely knows how to be 10 different guys.
What the hell? What's the name of the first? Jordan, it's not Georgie. Jeffrey.
What, the husband?
No. Rory Kinnear's first character, the caretaker. The house taker.
Right, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
Funny guy. Funny. Sorry. Have to. Audience score. Drastically lower.
I can imagine. First hint
I'll give you. What do you think this movie has?
45.
Lower.
38?
Yeah. higher ever so slightly.
39.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, 39.
We got it.
39%. Audience says, men might satisfy film fans comfortable with a... What? Men might satisfy film fans comfortable... Okay, sure. That's a... I suppose.
Sure.
With a lot of ambiguity and heavy symbolism. But for many others, it'll be hard to see the point. I don't think it's hard to see the point.
I think that's the opposite problem. It's that the point is very fucking clear.
The point is so clear. The last scene is, or last like 30 minutes are so clear on what it's trying to say. It's unbelievable.
That's crazy. Like, I've never seen the point be so obvious that it horseshoes back into being confusing for people.
Yeah. Crazy. I'd probably just lend this a cool like 50% straight up. Honestly, it's a very beautiful movie. I don't want to call the plot simple or the narrative simple.
Yeah,
but it's not complex either.
Exactly.
So it's like literally a cool 50%. So I'm giving away my score early. I'm gonna give it a 3 out of 6, like on the nose.
It's a clean mid. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly mid.
That's some shit exactly you smoke that when you don't want to get too high.
For real, for real, for real, for real. So, without further ado, if you want to watch the movie, go ahead and watch the movie streaming on Showtime. Probably Showtime. Could get it on YouTube. Probably get it on Amazon, rental, whatever.
Et cetera, that's et cetera. Where I watched it.
We're going to get into the spoiler section. So, if you want to see the movie, if you want to see this crazy final scene, now's your time to pause this. Come back to it after your watch.
It's a fucking doozy. And hear what we have to say.
It's a doozy. So, without further ado, we open with Harper, played by Jessie Buckley. Not sure what else she's been in, but quite the performance here. A solid performance. She actually said in that same article she never saw herself doing horror movies before. Huh. This is her first horror movie, fun fact. And she did pretty well. That's pretty much the final girl from start to finish. Like, she did pretty well.
Oh, she's the only girl.
Yeah, she literally just runs an hour and 40-minute long final girl circuit is what happens.
That's impressive.
And, yeah, the movie's an hour 40. Do I hate the length? I don't think so.
No, I think it's a fine length.
I don't think at any point... I did have to watch it in two parts. Well, unfortunately,
we're both hardworking adult men, so we have to watch everything in two parts.
Yeah, that is yeah, that's true. I watched like the first hour, and after the first hour, we were in the church.
Yeah,
and then which the church? Oh, the church one was weird. Yeah. Like that bit.
God,
the church. Whew.
God forbid if I could have more than 30 minutes to watch a movie at a time.
Honestly, so. I forget how it gives us, the first, I'd say 30, 45 minutes are interesting because it like micro doses us information on, how Harper got to this point.
Exactly.
So she's staying in this little cottage core esque little village. It's called Folkhorror, by the way. That's its label.
Oh, I love Folkhorror, man.
So just know that, keep that in mind for whatever that's worth to you other movie heads.
For all you, Folkhorror. For all you Wicker Man fans out there.
For real.
Banger.
They microdose information on Harper's marriage.
Yes.
And so it's an interesting, not subplot. We get a lot of it in flashbacks. And like I said, it's fed to us in bits and pieces. And then we see her like immediate reaction to re-remembering.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she's the victim of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
He really rocked her shit for no reason.
Her husband is a piece of fucking shit.
Yeah, he's threatening suicide because she wants to get a divorce.
Very.
And the whole reason she wants to get a divorce is because he threatens suicide every time she brings up the idea.
He's very emotionally abusive.
Extremely emotionally abusive. Extremely physically abusive.
Yep.
He's like, you must not want to be with... Or like, what does he say? It's like, you don't love me. If you loved me, you wouldn't want to divorce me. You want me to die.
Yeah,
you
well, at this point, what the fuck do you want me to say, right?
Yeah, it's like, okay, buddy. Yeah. Let's tone it down.
Let's cool it down, boss.
She ends up like, she was like texting a friend, like, I'm scared, you gotta help me. And he's like, you're scared. You're scared of me? That hurts my feelings. What is wrong with you? Why are you scared of me? It was bad. It was bad. Not fun. Not fun to watch. No.
It was very, very harrowing and very stressful to watch, but I gotta say, it's a very well-written piece of shit. Like, well, that's how you write that. Shit.
Yeah. And so, they decide to... What I did like is they make this bit ambiguous.
Ambiguous. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Whew. Thank you. His suicide is played up to be interpreted as whatever you think it is.
Yeah.
They mention he basically goes up one floor and tries to... She locks him out of their room. He goes up one floor and tries to climb down. And so the movie opens with him just falling. And we don't know who he is yet.
Yeah, just a cold open. What his relation
is to the movie. It's just... But when you look at his face in that moment... He looks shocked.
Yep.
And they definitely make eye contact. Like, he's going out of his way to stare at her as he's falling. And so the movie's like, is it a suicide or was it an accident? I think it's pretty clearly an accident. I don't really think that's up for debate.
I don't know.
He looks pretty shocked.
Well, I like to interpret it as... Like, that kind of, like, suicide mid-jump regret.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think he expected to be well, spoilers. I don't think he expected to be fucking impaled.
Yeah.
I think he just wanted to hit the ground and die.
For real. He ends up getting impaled, broken leg.
Yep. He's fucked.
Graphic. Very, they show us his body. Graphic.
Mangled.
And so... That sucks.
I mean, it sucks for him.
Get fucked, little bro.
Rest in piss, dude.
And he's played by Mr. Papa Asidu. Apologies if I mispronounce your name. I'm not familiar. He was in the Lazarus Project, the series.
Huh.
Hello? I don't know what the fuck that is. I didn't know it was a series. I know
Murder
the movie.
On Orient Express. That was pretty good.
But his limited role here, he does well. Yeah. He plays this piece of shit character well.
Well, I hope he gets more film roles. He seems to be mostly in theater.
Yeah, no, he's very, very good. Very good at what he did here. So she ends up taking this little 2-week trip by herself. She booked it under her married name. Mistake. First mistake.
Yep.
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
Where's the mister? You're a missus with no mister. Yikes.
Don't bring that up now, Jeffrey.
He tries to be very manly man. He's like, I can get all your bags at once. Don't even worry about it, sweetheart. Don't worry about it. And he fails. He doesn't do very well. He says the first thing that like catches you a little like, huh? He's like, my dad told me I had all the traits of a failed military man. And just walks away. Like that. He just drops that. Like, and he's like, bye.
Come again?
And just walks away. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
What does he mean by that?
Yeah, just oversharing within 5 minutes.
Yeah, for real. And she did not overshare back. Let that be known. She did not mention what happened. She's got some friends in this movie that she FaceTimes a couple of times. IMO, me personally, I think realistically, like, whoever this happens to probably invites a friend right away.
Yeah.
I don't think I take this venture by myself.
I don't think whoever this happens to doesn't even go on this vacation.
That too, probably. But I understand take it, considering the state of the relationship.
Yeah.
And she already paid for it, so whatever. Might as well try to make the most of it. But yeah, I probably would have brought a friend along. Or tried to. Yeah. I just don't even think I could be like physically alone at that point.
That's true.
Considering what she went through. But I get it, regardless. When does the movie start to get a little freaky? Green Man, for sure.
Yeah.
There's just a man hanging dong all throughout this movie, and he is our symbol as a whole.
I'm talking dick and balls, dude.
Just all dragging all over the place,
just swinging that shit around.
For real, dog. And he just pulls up on her in the yard.
You know,
it's like... What's good?
I think our next bit should be a counter of how many times we see a dick in a movie.
I feel like it's just... our episodes exclusively. I don't think I've seen a single movie or done a single movie with Gavin with a penis in it. Somebody correct me. I don't know. I'll have to look through the log. But yeah. I think John and I have covered a lot of penis, unfortunately.
I have to go back and watch all the movies we've watched and start the count there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good luck.
The trademark, regardless. The trademark Bloody Sport cock counter.
Trademark. For sure. And so, yeah, he's just a big embodiment of the Green Man. I don't really know what the fuck that means or that is. So like, my research only once went so far.
The basic
I don't know
research,
if you know much.
The basic research that I've done, apparently the Green Man is like a symbol of rebirth and like, and not fertility, but like vegetation and like life and plant life. He's often related to like vegetation deities.
Okay, yeah. Okay, it's explained a little bit in the article. So let's briefly read. Garland mentions the starting point for Mend was the Green Man. The Green Man being an ancient piece of pagan iconography found across Europe. Found in medieval churches. You'll see this male face with leaves pushing out of his mouth or intertwining with a beard. You'll see it on Victorian buildings. There's pubs called the Green Man. It's so commonplace, but people don't ever notice it.
Yeah.
So there's that. Then there's also the accentuated vulva thing that appears a bunch. And that's known as Sheila Na Giggs. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Thank you.
Yep.
Also, mysterious pagan carvings, he noted.
So she's...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Sheila Na Giggs is like mostly like a symbol of like fertility.
That checks out.
Yeah, that sounds right. Vulva, that sounds right.
Garland sought to craft a folk horror tale that tapped into primal fears and misperceptions that have animated gender relations all the way back to the story of Adam and Eve, again, which was a very obvious reference made in like the first 20 minutes of the movie. First thing she does is take an apple off this tree and eat it, and Jeffrey's like, why'd you do that?
Yeah, don't do that.
Just kidding. Just kidding, do whatever you want, pick as many apples as you like.
Oh, Jeffrey.
Interesting concept. And, I did like the whole, I guess it's probably, it was a few minutes. She's, like, walking around her house on FaceTime and, like, doesn't notice the Green Man.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, peering and poking through random windows, and she just somehow doesn't see him perfectly.
Just stalking her? That shit's fucking creepy. I did like that.
And that was effective. I liked it. I don't even think they necessarily used a very, like, I don't remember what am I trying to say? Music being
score.
A factor. Like, it was score. Thank you. Jeez Louise. For some reason, I was going to say tone like 10 times over, but that's just not correct. But yeah, they didn't really use score here. It's just kind of her talking to her friend very casually, and the Green Man's just casually dicking the balls out, walking around the house.
And you know what? I think that at least in my view as a film viewer now, I find it scarier when movies choose to do like a scary move, like a scary scene or like a jump scare at you without any sound.
Yeah.
Because I feel like so much of horror movies now, it's like, boo, gotcha.
Right.
That it's also.
And none of that here.
Yeah.
And I think that's how she like initially makes contact with him, is that tunnel scene. Right.
That was, that shot.
That was pretty good. I didn't like, she does this whole, in the fucking tunnel for like God knows an ungod, like, in my opinion, cool concept, way too long. It just, unless the tune, like, I don't know, I'm not, again, this, it could be another reference in and of itself. I feel like it's probably a classical musical piece, and it probably has some crazy title that she's like duplicating or replicating in some form or fashion. I have no fucking clue.
Listen,
I didn't like read the credits and see if it distinguished it, but I have a feeling that's what it is.
Yeah, listen, me and Dan, not European in the slightest. So, you know, you guys over there, let us know if this is some kind of fucking deep literary or artistic reference that we're missing out on.
Like, I'm sure it's some crazy, like, I don't even know,
some
random
folk tune.
Random ass middle European folk tune titled Men Are the Worst or something. I don't fucking know. I like, whatever. I'm sure it's something along those lines.
Yeah.
What was fucking scary is that this is how we first see just like the shadow build of the Green Man at like the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
It just fucking screams. and it echoes all the way down the tunnel.
That was cool.
So harrowing. So harrowing. It was so sick. And she just, like, what was interesting is that she does the thing when she doesn't run away from the problem. She kind of just, like, speed walks.
Yeah.
And I think it's that idea of, like, if it is something non-threatening, she doesn't want to seem rude immediately.
Yeah.
But if it is something threatening, she's moving just fast enough to outpace it.
And you know what? I'll give them that. That's a very well-written thing to put in, because that is something women find themselves having to do a lot.
And it's not the first instance of that happen. Like, I think the next bit is the church bit. Yeah. Sort of, like, after the Green Man. Like, the next big... Well, I guess the cops are kind of like,
yeah,
eh. They arrest the Green Man. They're like, he's a homeless man, you know. You didn't have to get him arrested, shit.
Yeah. There's also when she meets, like, the priest and the little boy, who both look like Jeffrey.
Yeah. So, like we said, Rory Kiner plays all the men. The little boy, it was a fucking weird looking little. He wants to play hide and seek. He wants her to hide.
Fuck that priest, by the way.
Oh, for because, sure.
Because she tells him about James's death, and he's like, maybe you're, like, kind of at fault for that.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck you, dude.
Did you give him a chance to apologize? It's crazy. It's so... I remember I was watching that scene, and I was like, hello? Huh?
I guess what? Men do be like that, huh?
And it's interesting. So the little boy wants to play hide and seek. She says no. I thought it was a little funny. He's like, stupid bitch. And runs away. All goofy. Who the fuck? Apparently that's supposed to be a 9-year-old boy. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. And then, yeah, the priest is, or I forget, it states with a V, I believe.
Oh, vicar.
They call him. Thank you. Yeah, vicar. He's specifically a vicar. Whatever the fuck.
Whatever the difference is.
Apologies. He's like, and at first, yeah, he's very nice and compassionate and, like, there for her, and he subtly ends up with a hand on her thigh,
and in
it's
typical,
one of those
no, go ahead.
Typical priest fashion.
Yeah, he starts groping without consent.
Yeah, for real. And then he says what he says about, what's her face?
Yeah.
What's his face? Sorry. You know, you ever think it was your fault? You didn't give him a chance to apologize.
Yeah.
And she's like, fuck you. And then just walks away. And then, oh, God, the imagery. Ugh. He, like, he's on a bench. There's, like, two little, like, wood slats with, like, gaps in between them. And he starts, like, doing a little thing with his fingers in between the gap. And it's like, ugh.
I hate it.
Like, what's he do? He, like, smells the seat and shit. It's like,
oh my God.
Come on. Just come on.
Men are freaks.
Come on. All men are the same. That's how the Juice WRLD song goes, I'm pretty sure. Right?
I don't know.
Boo.
You're the Juice WRLD fan.
It's not. I know. That was the joke. It's very, very much so all girls are the same. But either way. Dan White putting Juice WRLD references in Bloody Spork episodes.
I'm surprised it took us this long.
I knew I'd get one in there eventually.
He's been plotting on this.
For sure, for sure. I thought about that bar when I was watching the movie,
oh,
you know?
Oh, my God.
Either way. I think, I don't even remember. Past the bar, or past the church bit, what, she goes and gets drinks at the local pub?
Yeah.
They're all Rory Kiner. Again. There's now six Rory Kiners surrounding her.
That part freaked me out a little bit.
The cop is there. The cop's like, yeah, we let off your intruder, by the way.
Yeah.
We couldn't really book him for anything.
We legally had no reason to keep him.
Other than the fact that he was nude on your property.
Which I think is kind of enough of a reason, but whatever. I'm not a cop, I guess.
Yeah. And then, what is it? She's like, are you serious? And he was like, he was stalking me. He was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
She's like, I saw him in the woods. And he was like, yeah, he's homeless. So, near, like, very clearly just, like, shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're talking about, lady. We don't buy it. Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And we're kind of just beating through this. We're on a tight schedule.
I mean,
It's 8:52. Bit of a tight schedule. Just to preemptively warn you of the potential 50-minute episode you're about to get.
Well, it's just
But
like,
it's, all, it's been, like, strictly analytical, so you can't be mad.
It's all... Yeah, exactly. But also, this movie's plot is very, like... tight and short.
It is. And it's very, and again, like, a super simple premise. Men are shit.
Yeah, I don't think we've been rushing through it at shit? All.
And because there's a lot we just can't encompass because it's just very artsy. Like, that whole musical sequence in the tunnel was probably at least 5 minutes.
Yeah.
If I had, like, I'm not, and that's not even an exaggeration. Like, I think it was close to about five, because she goes like, ah.
Yeah.
Ah. And that takes, like, a whole minute itself. And we don't even, like I said, we're an hour in when we get to the church. And there's 40 minutes left in the movie.
Exactly. So, like,
that out, it's a very slow burn movie.
A lot of this movie is just looking at it.
Yeah, and just, like, interpreting symbolism and exactly what it all means to the plot, the core of it all, basically. So, past the church and past the pub, she ends up back home, and she finally is like, yes, friend, you can come here, let's chill, etc., etc. She was thinking about leaving on FaceTime with a friend. What I didn't, what was a little goofy, I can stretch my imagination so far, but not this far. They're on FaceTime, and she's trying to give the address of the place to her friend, and the FaceTime disconnects twice, and then she still tries calling back a third time.
Yeah.
Bro, if you don't just text that shit after the first one, why wouldn't you just want to text it to her in the first place?
Exactly.
She could just have it.
That's a little bit of that boomer writing coming in.
That's a little bit of the 15 years working on a script coming in.
Yeah. I didn't write this.
I
didn't write this with FaceTime was a thing, all right?
Yeah. Back when I started this movie in 2007.
When I was FaceTime on my fucking was barely flip a phone. Concept.
I was just worried about cell phone towers.
Texting was barely a thing.
Green messages. There weren't even colors. But, yeah, so that happens.
Yeah.
Her friend does eventually get the address because at the end her friend does pull up. But not without this last sequence of unholy events, basically.
Yeah.
She ends up getting attacked by Rory Keener in every form of himself, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like. Originally, it's Jeffrey, who you think has been the one good guy in the entire movie. He's not. After a bit of a bout, and the movie shows you that it's all the same guy, because she ends up doing damage to him, and then the damage transfers to each of the men in the movie.
I thought that was interesting.
And it was, and I liked that. And that was basically like, hey, if you haven't gotten it so far,
all men are the same. They're all literally one being.
And because of that, and the way the movie, and we're almost there. We're almost to the, like,
almost cool there, guys. Moment. To the payoff.
I think that adds to Rory Keener's interpretation of it, where it's, like, more of, not a delusion, per se, but, like, her going through her trauma, basically. It's a very surreal, dreamlike, almost, state that she's just going through.
Yeah, it's like dream logic. A living
nightmare. Yeah. 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 Nightmare logic, really.
Yeah.
And so, and the injuries they sustained are the exact same injuries her husband sustained when he committed suicide. So, you know, impaled hand, broken leg or ankle, whatever.
In case you haven't gotten it yet.
Not a fan of that. Every time the ankle stepped, it, like, re-snapped. Ugh. Or, like, made a re-snap sound. And I'm very sensitive about ankle injuries because I play soccer still. And I'm just like, that's the scariest part for me. Was just hearing an ankle snap every 10 seconds.
Trust me, as somebody who snapped his ankle, like, 2 days before watching this movie, I was fairly sensitive to that.
And, so, John, how would you best describe the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of what happens?
How can I put this in a way? I feel like we're always stuck with the things that are very uncomfortable to describe.
Remember how vocal I was in Titan when she fucked a car?
Yeah.
Multiple cars at that.
And a fire truck.
Oh, man, and a fire truck.
Yeah.
Ooh, don't even get me started. Now that we're here, that whole toxic masculinity, like, cycle, they took that literally.
Yeah.
And physically literally.
So,
and we just get this crazy. Go ahead.
So the Green Man shows up, right? And he gives birth to.
Yep.
He just straight up just pops out the little boy that we the little Jeffrey that we saw earlier in the movie.
He's randomly just the size of a fucking boulder.
Yep.
Gives birth to a giant man.
Yep.
Just straight up. Ooh. No baby, just straight
a human. Grown man. Who then in turn gives birth to the vicar. who is also a grown man popping out of another man. Mm-hmm. Who in turn
just
gives birth to Jeffrey.
Keeps going. We get to a back pussy.
Yeah.
We get a mouth birth.
It ends,
I believe, with her husband being reborn.
Yeah, Jeffrey gives birth to James.
Which, and now that we've come full circle, I think this is like the strongest point in Kinnear's corner, is that they basically talk at the end.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember the conversation too well.
Basically, he just asked her, Harper asked him, like, what the fuck do you want, man?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I just want your love, dude.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I just want your love. Well, bro.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Should have toned it back some.
Well, maybe. You shouldn't have punched me in the goddamn face.
For real, it was that simple. That's all you had to not do. You just didn't have to hit me.
Yeah, you know? Literally. Just don't be a dick.
Interesting point with the husband's rebirth specifically is that he was born feet first, which is very problematic, which is interesting.
Yeah.
At its core, weird how the problematic character. Mm-hmm.
Well.
Interesting.
Popping out feet first kind of resembles him jumping off the roof because he goes down feet first.
You're spitting. John's right. Give it up.
What can I say?
Genius.
What can I say?
That's a good, strong point. Yeah, and then that's kind of it.
Her friend shows up?
Yeah, and so her friend shows up pregnant, and people think that means something. I couldn't fucking tell you what the hell it means.
I find it weird that they included that, and I don't really know why. Maybe it's for some...
Like, it's...
For some giga-brain, fourth-dimensional chess reason that I myself can't comprehend.
Like, it's gotta be intentional. Because otherwise, you don't just make the friend pregnant for no reason.
Well, it's like to the point...
Like, there's no way.
To the point, even the Wikipedia summary makes a point of saying she's pregnant.
Yeah, like, everything thus far has been intentional. There's no... Like, obviously, it's not an accident. Yeah. I just don't know how to perceive it.
Maybe...
Other than...
Maybe it's supposed to make you think, oh, God, after you see five pregnancies and five births in a row.
Right. I'm my concept, or maybe train of thought, is that the friend maybe hasn't spoken of any significant other this entire movie, and so the two of them coming together at the very end is like basically the end of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Like, this baby that she will birth will be the start of something new.
Yeah.
Because they don't tell us enough about the friend.
She's but literally my train barely of thought a is character. Like,
yeah, my train of thought, we just get FaceTime calls in passing, is it?
Yeah.
Maybe they both don't have male significant others, and now they're going to... The implication, because they're spending these next 2 weeks together, maybe the implication is that they raise this child together, removing the toxic masculine from the situation, ensuring that this baby is basically safe
for
the future. I don't know.
Well,
that's just off the rip thought process, perhaps. I don't know.
Because the movie ends with Harper seeing her friend and smiling. And I just interpret that as a woman going through, like, some bullshit with a guy or, like, out somewhere and then seeing another woman and being like, oh, thank God, and feeling comfortable.
Girl power. Yeah. Which is good. I'm glad, you know, this is a strong ending.
Well, because, like, women do a lot to make each other feel safe, whether it be out in public or in private, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure. So, I'm glad it ended the way it did.
Yeah.
I'm glad that she survived. I think if she had died, that would have really just further... pushed my point that, like, there was no consequences for men being shitty.
Yeah.
It kind of is the same end result as Barbarian, where the only living characters are women.
Yep.
So that's strong. That's in its favor. But past that, you know, like I said, definition of just middle of the pack Not a great movie. Not a terrible movie. 3 out of 6 for me.
Yep.
John?
I'd say a 3 out of 6 for me as well. Definitely worth one watch, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, just because, you know, we're a bunch of A24 fanboys, so whatever. Yeah.
And I do really enjoy Alex Garland as a director, so, you know, even if this isn't his best project that I've seen from him, like, definitely not bad at all.
But it's good enough, and I've heard good enough things to where I'm curious about the other two. Oh. So if you want to hear about Ex Machina or Annihilation, let us know. I think they're horror-ish.
Annihilation is. Ex Machina really isn't that much.
All right, well, let us know if you want to hear about Annihilation.
Annihilation's great.
That's like a futuristic sci-fi.
Kind of it's like a sci-fi horror.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Well, I'd do it. That's going to do it for this episode. I think we're going to hit like just over 50 minutes. Like I said, bit of a rush. I got to leave in like 10 minutes or so. For a game, so
wish him luck, folks.
Thank you. Please, Sporkies. I mean, you're gonna hear this after the game is over, but I have a game Saturday morning, so wish me luck anyway. Thank you. If you want to email us further, movie, that's not right, that's not the order. Sorry. If you want to, you can follow us on Instagram at Bloody Spork. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our newer social media, you can follow us at Bloody Spork Pod. If you want to email us further movie suggestions and or spork feeding topics, you can email us at bloodysporkpod@gmail.com. Always linked down below. I'll be sure to link the LA Times article. Spork feeding episode next week. We're going to have Chelsea back in the stew. You know the vibe. I posted it on our Instagram today. Make sure you get in some topics. We've gotten some interesting ones so far. Ooh, and by that, fun. I mean interesting ones singular. If I can pull it up really quickly, just to bring it up, if you're still listening, retention is really low at this point. But you might still be here. It's going to be deep memory cartoons. And the example given was the Scooby-Doo Cyber Chase movie.
Okay.
So I think of those core four Scooby-Doo movies as like the Cyber Chase one, the zombie one.
Which one?
The witches one. Yeah, there's another one.
Oh, the aliens. Right now.
Yeah. So... if that's an interesting topic, let us know. We'll lock that in like ahead of time. If there's other topics you want to hear about, suggest us at any of the various media I just listed. Whew! Without further ado, that's going to do it. I'm Dan.
I'm John.
And have a great day, Sporkies.
Enjoy the rest of your week, folks. We love you.
And see you for Spork Feeding 3, baby. Pew, 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 pew.